Have you ever just felt off, maybe really tired for no reason, kind of weak or just, low energy, that feeling where something's not quite right, but you just can't pin it down? Well, today we're diving deep into something that might be behind it, a nutrient that's often overlooked, but actually plays this huge role in how you feel. Vitamin B12. Our mission here is simple. We want to give you the essential info fast. We'll unpack why B12 is so crucial, how you might spot signs you're low, they can be subtle, and importantly, what you can actually do about it, especially around testing and keeping your levels healthy. Think of this as your quick guide.
Yeah, and the source material we're drawing on is really thorough. It gives great practical insights into, understanding your B12 status. And what's surprising is just how many people might be walking around a bit deficient and not even know it.
Okay, let's get into it then. What exactly is vitamin B12? Why is it so vital?
Right. So scientifically, it's called cobalamin. It's a water-soluble vitamin.
Water-soluble, meaning you don't store it long-term.
Exactly. Your body doesn't really hang on to it like fat-soluble vitamins. You need a fairly steady supply because what you don't use, you basically get rid of. And it's absolutely essential for lots of bodily functions, especially keeping your nerve cells healthy. Think of that as your body's wiring and also producing red blood cells, the ones carrying oxygen everywhere.
Okay, wiring and oxygen, pretty fundamental.
Definitely. And what makes B12 unique is, well, its complex structure and how it gets absorbed. It needs something called intrinsic factor.
Intrinsic
Yeah,
factor.
it's a protein your stomach makes. Think of it like a special key or a VIP pass. Without that specific pass, the B12 molecule, no matter how much you eat, can't actually get unlocked and absorbed into your bloodstream.
Ah, that VIP pass idea makes sense. So, where do we typically get this B12 from, and what makes getting enough tricky sometimes?
Good question. It's naturally found mainly in animal-based foods. So things like meat, fish, eggs, and dairy products are good sources. But that's where the challenge comes in, particularly for people on vegetarian or especially vegan diets.
Right, because it's not really in plants.
Not reliably, no. So they often have to look towards fortified foods, things like cereals or plant milks that have B12 added or take supplements. And what's really interesting is how varied the symptoms of a deficiency can be, and often quite subtle, especially at first.
Like, what kind of symptoms are we talking about?
Early on, it might just be fatigue, maybe some weakness, just feeling generally unwell, that kind of malaise.
That sounds like it could be anything, though. Easy to brush off.
Exactly. That's the tricky part. It's like a master of disguise. You might blame feeling tired on, a busy week or not sleeping well when B12 could be the real issue. As things progress, you might get other signs too, like constipation, maybe losing your appetite. And crucially, neurological issues can start showing up.
Neurological, like what?
Sensations like numbness or tingling, often in the hands and feet, pins and needles, that kind of thing.
Okay, tingling and numbness. That sounds more serious than just feeling tired.
It is. And here's where it gets really concerning. Those neurological signs are particularly alarming because if you lack enough B12 for a long time, it can actually lead to irreversible nerve damage.
Irreversible, wow.
Yes, so catching it early is absolutely critical. Once that damage is done, it might not be fixable.
Okay, that really underscores the importance. So, thinking about the listener, who should be most aware of this? Who are the high-risk groups for B12 deficiency?
Well, obviously vegetarians and vegans, as we mentioned, because their primary sources are limited. But also, older adults are a really key group. As we age, our ability to absorb nutrients can decrease, often due to changes in digestion.
So it's not just about intake, but absorption too, that VIP pass thing again.
Precisely. It's like you might be eating B12, but your body isn't letting it in properly. And then there are people with specific medical conditions. Pernicious anemia is a big one. That's an autoimmune issue where the body actually attacks those intrinsic factor cells.
So the body stops making the key.
Exactly. Or people with gastrointestinal disorders like Crohn's or celiac disease, or even those who've had certain types of stomach or intestinal surgery. All of those can interfere with absorption.
Makes sense. So knowing these risks, that naturally leads to testing, right? Why is getting tested so important?
It's absolutely essential. Testing is key for catching deficiencies early, ideally before you get serious problems like anemia or that neurological damage we talked about. Plus, an early diagnosis means you can get a personalized treatment plan sorted out much faster. That might just be dietary changes for some, or maybe supplements, or in more severe cases, B12 injections.
Right, getting ahead of it. So this raises a practical question. How often should someone actually get tested? Is it like an annual checkup thing?
It really depends. There isn't a single answer fits all. Frequency can vary a lot based on your individual situation. For example, if you are in a high-risk group, maybe you're vegan or over 65 or have one of those conditions, your doctor might recommend more regular checks. Maybe yearly, maybe more often as levels were borderline.
And if you're not high risk?
If you don't have obvious risks or symptoms, you might not need routine testing unless something changes or a specific concern comes up. Doctors usually tailor the schedule based on your history, diet, symptoms, everything.
So definitely a conversation to have with your GP.
Absolutely. Open dialogue is key. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a potential pitfall is trying to interpret results yourself without that professional context, or just relying on one test result without looking at the bigger picture of your health.
Good point. Okay, let's get practical. If someone's listening and thinking, maybe I should get this checked, how do they actually go about getting a vitamin B12 blood test? What are the options?
Well, the most common route is through your local GP surgery. You can usually just call them up and ask about getting a B12 test, maybe discuss your reasons or symptoms.
Straightforward enough.
Yeah.
Any other ways?
Yeah, these days there are also online booking platforms that work with labs. That can be convenient. The main thing, whichever route you take, is to make sure it's a reputable provider.
Good advice. And is there anything you should do beforehand, like gather info?
It's definitely helpful to think about your diet beforehand and jot down any symptoms you've been experiencing. That way, when you talk to the doctor or healthcare professional, you can give them a clear picture. It helps them assess things properly.
What about private clinics? Are they an option too?
Yes, they are. Private clinics often offer quicker appointments, sometimes even same day, and the process can be very streamlined. That can be appealing if you want to avoid potential wait times you might encounter elsewhere.
What should you look for in a private clinic?
You'd want to research clinics near you, look at the cost, obviously the location's convenience, and maybe see if they offer other relevant health checks too. Reading reviews or testimonials online can also give you a good sense of their service quality.
Okay, so you've booked the test. What about preparing for the actual blood draw? Do you need to fast?
Generally, no. Fasting isn't usually required for a B12 test. That's one less thing to worry about.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. But it is really important to tell the person drawing the blood or your doctor beforehand about any medications or supplements you're taking, especially B vitamin supplements, obviously, as they could affect the results.
Makes sense. Anything else?
Some people might choose to fast for maybe 6-8 hours anyway, just to be safe, but it's usually not necessary.
Hmm.
Best to follow the specific advice given by the clinic or your doctor.
Okay. And the test itself, what's it like? I know some people aren't keen on needles.
Understandable. It's a standard blood draw. They'll take a small sample of blood from a vein, usually in your arm. A phlebotomist or nurse does it. The whole thing typically only takes a few minutes. You might feel a quick pinch or a little discomfort when the needle goes in, but honestly, for most people, it's over quickly and pretty manageable.
Any side effects to expect afterwards?
Usually very minor. You might get a little bit of bruising or maybe slight bleeding right where the needle went in.
Mm-hmm.
That normally clears up quickly. Serious complications like infection or, you know, excessive bleeding are really rare, especially when everything's done properly by trained staff.
Okay, good to know. It's generally a quick and low-risk procedure. So the test is done. What happens next? How do you actually understand the results when you get them? They can look like just numbers.
Right. You'll usually get your results back within a few days, depending on the lab. They're typically measured in picograms per milliliter, written as PGML.
Picograms? That sounds tiny.
It is. We're talking about incredibly small amounts, but they have a big impact. So the normal range is generally considered to be somewhere between 200 and 900 PGML.
200 to 900, okay.
Levels that fall below 200 PGML might indicate a deficiency. But, and this is important, numbers aren't the whole story.
What do you mean?
Well, someone might have a level slightly below 200 but feel fine, while someone else might be at, say, 250 but have clear deficiency symptoms. So it's crucial to look at the result in the context of your individual symptoms and your overall health picture.
Ah, so the number is a clue, not the final answer.
Exactly. That's why it's so important to actually talk through the results with a healthcare professional. Don't just look at the number online and jump to conclusions. They can explain what your specific level means for you, considering your symptoms, your diet, your risk factors. That discussion really empowers you to make informed decisions about what to do next, if anything.
That makes perfect sense. So let's say the discussion happens and a deficiency is identified. What are the typical next steps for you then?
If a deficiency is confirmed, the next steps depend a lot on how low the levels are and what the likely cause is. It might involve dietary changes, consciously eating more B12-rich foods if possible, or, more commonly, supplementation with B12 tablets or sprays.
And the injections you mentioned earlier?
Yes. If the deficiency is severe, or if there's an absorption problem like with pernicious anemia, then B12 injections might be necessary. They bypass the digestive system altogether. The key thing is that the healthcare professional will work with you to figure out the best plan. It's personalized, not just a standard prescription for everyone.
Okay. And looking long term, how can people, especially those maybe at higher risk, maintain healthy levels?
Good question. For those at risk, regular monitoring, as we discussed, is often recommended. Just keeping an eye on things. Diet-wise, consistently including those B12-rich foods is obviously helpful if your diet allows it. So meat, fish, eggs, dairy, fortified breakfast cereals can also contribute.
And for vegans or vegetarians?
For them, it's really about being proactive with fortified foods like fortified plant milk, some meat substitutes, nutritional yeast is a popular one, or very often, taking a regular B12 supplement is the most reliable way.
Nutritional yeast. That stuff has B12.
Some types are fortified with it, yes. It has a cheesy flavor. People use it in cooking. And again, it's always best to make any significant dietary changes or start supplements after talking it over with a healthcare professional or maybe a registered dietitian.
Great advice. So to wrap up, it seems like vitamin B12 is this small thing with a really big job. Easily missed, maybe, but the consequences of being low can be quite serious, especially that nerve damage risk. But the encouraging part is recognizing those subtle signs we talked about, the fatigue, the tingling, and knowing that getting tested is actually pretty straightforward. It puts you in control.
Absolutely. And, you know, thinking about this raises a broader point.
Yeah.
Given how vital B12 is and how, well, sneaky its deficiency symptoms can be.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it, what other seemingly minor nutrients might be playing a hidden but absolutely critical role in your overall health and well-being that perhaps you haven't even considered?
That's a really interesting thought to leave people with. It definitely encourages you to think a bit more deeply about your own health, your diet, maybe those little unexplained feelings. So if anything we've discussed today, the symptoms, the risk factors resonates with you, the clear advice is talk to your doctor or healthcare provider. Taking charge of your health often starts with understanding your body better, and knowing your B12 status seems like a really valuable piece of that puzzle.